Shaw, have you ever been a contract agent for the Central Intelligence Agency?
And if I were, Mr. Garrison, do you believe I would be here today talking to somebody like you?
People like you don't have to, I guess.
May I go?
People like you, they just walk between the raindrops. One may smile and smile and be a villain. God damn it, we got one of them. Did you see that?
And now, more good news. Bad news. Truth on Cloak and Dagger, live on Mojo Radio.
Okay, we're back. I'm Lenny Bloom, and Sleeper's here, keeping us in touch with the internet. It's 12:26. We're coming to you live from downtown Toronto, the counterintelligence headquarters of the planet. The royalties are at war. The secret governments and the shadow government have secrets they don't want you to learn. And Mr. David Icke, our next guest, who has been with us before.
Yes, show 20, which was actually November 24th in 2002, and then again early on our 25th show in 2003, talking consecutively about 9/11, and then at the time Bush and Bin Laden, pre-war jitters and the conspiracies going on.
And David, welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Hello, Lenny.
David, there are so many people that I can't figure out why they are so angry with you and say nasty things about you. We had an email today from the Friends of the Holocaust group here in Toronto, and they wanted to link you to groups which contravene Canada's criminal code and the Broadcast Act. The last time you were on, everything you said was tremendously erudite and wasn't a racist or hateful. What sort of truth are you pointing out about the monarchy and the royalty to get all their trickle-down little tentacles and puppet groups trying to keep you off the air, because we don't want you to say anything racist tonight?
Well, first of all, that's not possible, Lenny, because I don't have a racist cell in my body.
Exactly.
If you could, if anyone could just explain to me why someone who has the philosophy, which I very much develop in detail in a new book I've just produced, Tales from the Time Loop, that actually everything in this five-sense reality is an illusion, and it can be shown scientifically how it's produced.
And we're
how can an illusion that's generated by our minds be racist anyway? What kind of amazes me is those who shout racism at others are themselves more obsessed with race and people's genetics than anywhere else on the planet. And I would say this to those people. In Nazi Germany, the Third Reich, by the way, as I expose in this and other books, never ended. It just swapped its jackboots for business suits, and it was business as usual, and moved big time in on America after the war.
Uh-huh.
But one of the fundamental, in fact, the fundamental necessity for any tyranny like the Nazis in Germany is the suppression of freedom of expression to stop the exposure of the tyranny emerging. And I find it absolutely grotesque that those that claim to be speaking for those who suffered in Nazi Germany should today be seeking to do exactly what those sick people did in the last century, which was deny the freedom to expose them in Germany. Look at any tyranny on this planet, and you will see the suppression of freedom of expression. I just want to give you a quote here. What if these people could tell me who said this? The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension the truth becomes the greatest enemy of the state. That was said by Dr. Joseph Goebbels,
Goebbels,
propaganda minister for the Nazis. So I would ask these people,
yep,
these self-appointed censors of what Canadians can and cannot hear.
Well, they don't want you to expose the global conspiracy, David.
It reflects something appalling that happened in Germany a very short time ago.
Now, your book, The Tales of the Time Loop, exposes the global conspiracy, and we know that the shadow governments and the secret governments keep their power by keeping people deceived and out of touch. And so remember this, that in a time of universal deceit, David, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Yeah, George Orwell.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the irony of this is, Lenny, as I expose in great detail in Tales from the Time Loop, is that we're actually looking, and I've been exposing this for 14 years now, and actually describing it throughout this period as the fact that we are looking at a global version of Nazi Germany. And when you look at what's happening in America, Europe too, but particularly America, and the statements that are coming out of the Bush administration, they are absolute repeats of what came out of the mouths of the Nazis at the time of the horrors there in the 20th century. Let me give you another quick quote. An evil exists that threatens every man, woman, and child of this great nation. We must take steps to ensure our domestic security and protect our homeland. Who said that? Bush? Ashcroft? Rumsfeld? No, that was Adolf Hitler announcing the creation of the Gestapo using the very same justification that we're seeing in the creation of Homeland Security, i.e. Homeland Control, and these other organizations that suppress dissent and militarize domestic law enforcement in North America.
Now, David, let's just take a breath here.
Others really ought to face the fact that when this new world order, this global fascist state comes down, which is going to happen unless we wake up, which is happening in front of our eyes, it's not just people like me who are going to be targets of it. So are they. We're all in this together. We all have an equal consequence in terms of our freedom being taken away, and we need to unite behind that and not allow ourselves to be divided and ruled by these idiots.
Okay, now David
slurs around without any understanding of the background whatsoever.
Okay, now let me just get into a couple of things here. While we're listening, let's just take a reset here. You're listening to AM 640 Mojo Radio, Talk Radio for Spies. David, on our website at mojoradio.com, you click on the Cloak and Dagger link. We have a story that came, I tried to get you on our show at the time of the Ontario provincial election, because a very interesting thing came out at that time. Our Ontario provincial premier, Ernie Eves, if you go to Cloak and Dagger and click on the story there, it says the reptilians. The Ontario provincial premier, Ernie Eves, suggested that his opponent, Dalton McGuinty, is a reptilian. And I have, if you click on it, I was shocked when I heard this, and the complete verbatim transcript is on Cloak and Dagger, taken off of one of the local Toronto papers. And it says, Ernie Eves said that McGuinty, quote-unquote, is an evil reptilian kitten eater. And when I heard that, I said, oh my goodness, one of your fans is our premier here, Ernie Eves, who obviously has been reading your book, obviously is keeping an eye on what's going on for us, and brought this out. I'm just wondering if you saw it at the time. We tried to get you on air, but you were busy elsewhere. But I didn't want to let that go by without throwing that at you.
Well, I don't know without talking to him, Lenny. I mean, people use terms like reptile in a derogatory sense without actually meaning it literally. So I don't know. But what's very clear, bizarre as it may seem, is that there is a very clear non-human connection, indeed controlling force, behind those who are in the key positions of power, who are manipulating the world towards this global fascist state. Whether the premier is reading my books or not, only he knows, and whether that was a motivation, I don't know. All I can do is keep putting out the you know, the information that I have, but without talking to him, I really don't know what his motivation was for that.
Right, so that was a local story, not one you'd necessarily be familiar with. Just to jump back a little bit, I would suggest that most of the people I talk to who have an opinion about you have never even come close to completing one of your works. And I think there's a big opportunity for you to actually just republish all your books backwards, because the tone of the beginning of your books is dramatically different than the end of your books. And depending on the order you read it in, it would give you a different picture of your stance and how you feel about the world and what you actually represent. And it's what you represent, obviously, that they don't want on the air. It's certainly not the content of your books.
Well, the thing is that I have to produce the information in a way that I feel I need to produce it. How people receive it is entirely up to them. You see, we live in a world in which we're constantly looking for other people to confirm that we're okay, or to we're looking at what would the people want, and therefore editing ourselves and living our own lives in line with what we think others want or whatever. Well, I frankly don't do that. I have no interest in doing that. I put down what I believe to be true. I support it with the sourcing, and I do it in a way that I feel it needs to be done. And then I'm completely at peace with how it's received.
We also take
so you know, I'm certainly not going to redo my books. I don't feel there's any need.
Oh, I meant it facetiously to do the book backwards.
But
obviously, you use a lot of methods, because I hear you on radio. You have videotapes. You do live speaking. You do international seminars. Again, your books and essays and your webpage. So you're trying it on all angles.
Exactly. I mean, the reason I was interested hearing the caller earlier about the books. If he realized the economics of producing them, he would realize the answer to the question. So the reason my books are very long is because people, obviously, when they hear that a few people are actually controlling the planet, and it goes back thousands of years and is interbreeding bloodlines and all this stuff, if I wrote short books summarizing this, they'd say, oh yeah, well that's interesting, mate, but where's your evidence? So what I do with the books is I put all the stuff in there. That's why they're thick and detailed. And I summarize it in other ways through, let's just say, the videos and the talks and stuff. So
right.
People who don't want to go into there and get all the details.
Well, we have a caller with a question about your books. Another David from Mississauga. Hi, welcome to Cloak and Dagger, David. You're on with David Icke.
Right.
Oh, turn your radio down, please. Are you there, David?
With a question about your books. Another David from Mississauga. Hi, welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Oh, sorry about that. We'll go to another caller. Oh, when is David coming back to? Emily, hi. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Hi, thank you so much. Mr. Icke, I saw you at Hart House, and I also saw you in 2001 when we were running all over the city trying to see you.
I know.
That was wild. Talk about living what you were saying in your books and your videos and everything. I'm a big fan, and I was just wondering, have you got any plans of coming back to Toronto? Because there's a lot of us who want to see you.
Well, I tell you the problem, Emily. I don't have to, because you've experienced it. There are people who actually believe, I think they probably still do in 2003, that Canada is actually a free country. Well, they should have been around me in the last few years trying to speak in Canada. There is a group, indeed there's a guy who actually works, a guy called Richard Warman, who actually works for the Canadian government's, wait for this, Canadian Human Rights Commission. Isn't freedom of speech a basic human right? He asked himself. I think it probably is. Who has been trying to get my events banned in Canada and my books banned in Canada for a very long time. And so whenever I come, first of all, I have to put aside in my schedule at least 5 to 6 hours sitting in customs and immigration when I arrive at a Canadian airport.
They're always going to give you a half hour.
Reason to not let me in the country. And then, of course, fail, because what they've been told, I'm going to be bringing in the country, doesn't exist. and then you're chasing places to speak, because venue owners are told this man is going to come and say all this stuff, which I, of course, have no intention of saying, because don't believe it. And others are intimidated into thinking, well, I'd like the guy to speak, but oh my goodness me, I can't stand the hassle. And so coming to Canada is a real, real hassle.
Yes.
But in 2004, I will be coming back. That's absolutely for sure.
Okay, well, there's some good news for you, Emily.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks for calling
Cloak & Dagger. We have to go to break now, folks. We're on here with David Icke, Cloak & Dagger, cloakanddagger.ca, AM 640, Mojo Radio. And I'm looking forward to, because we have David for another hour and 20 minutes, which is great. It's a good long time to get into his material.
Call in.
As he started out saying, we live in a hologram. The whole world's a matrix. Nothing we see is real. So we can talk about all these points, historical points, and all these things, but what it all comes down to is that grand illusion that is a part of our percept of the world. So we're going to get into that, folks.
And we'll hear more from David on the people in our government who represent the secret shadow government that don't want you to learn the secrets. It's not about hate. It's about keeping you from learning the truth on the all-new AM 640 Mojo Radio, Conspiracy Radio for All Spies.
Joseph Mengele, who took me around to these rituals a lot of the time, was also a shapeshifter with programming and so on. And he has, Baron Guy de Rothschild has tried to program me. All these years he has been trying to control me, get me back under control.
Cloak and Dagger lines are open. 416-870-6400 or cellular, *640. It's talk radio for spies on Mojo Radio.
Okay, we're back with David Icke, and we're talking about the global conspiracy and how it's being manipulated through secret governments, shadow governments, and through a new fascist element that's rising around the world. And that was from Arizona Wilder, who was a woman who was being programmed by Dr. Joseph Mengele, who was brought by Alan Dulles and the whole OSS CIA gang to China Lake in California. And we're talking, as I say, to David Icke. And we're going to go to the phone lines, Sleeper.
Yeah, let's just shoot through here. We're going to callers, keep your questions short, and we're going to get as many people on as possible. Hi, Brian. Another book question for David. Welcome to Cloak & Dagger.
Yes, Mr. Icke.
Hi, Brian.
I'm interested in the concept of the time loop, and do you see that in the Matrix series? Have you watched the Matrix series?
Oh, yes, I have. And whoever, we know who was behind it on a producer level, the Wachowski brothers, they certainly understand a great deal, not just about the nature of reality, the illusory nature of it, which the first movie particularly captured brilliantly. They also understand much of the manipulation of that reality by the forces that I've been exposing in my books all these years. I mean, you see interesting things like in my books I've been pointing out for years and years and years the importance to this Illuminati of a particular bloodline. It was a royal bloodline in what we now call France centuries ago, called the Merovingians, which I talk at some length in my books. And it was absolutely no accident that the key player and gatekeeper, if you like, in the last two of the Matrix movies was a Frenchman that the movie called the Merovingian. So when you kind of research this and you watch those Matrix movies, the last two, particularly the last one, are much more subtle in their portrayal of things than the first one was. You realize that the people that wrote the scripts and put that together, sure as heck, have a lot of knowledge about what's going on in the world. And, you know, what the Sleeper was saying before the break about the fact that
although we can talk about secret societies and all this five-sense level of this manipulation, and we should, for we need to be aware of these things, the bottom line of the whole thing, both the manipulation and our ability to dismantle it, which, though it may not seem it at the time, at this time we're in the process of doing, it is this whole area of what is reality and how we create it, because we're living a lucid dream, we have been conditioned to believe the dream is real. And illusions can control us when we think they're real. They cannot control us when we know they're illusions. And that's the area where this whole conspiracy is going to come down.
Yeah, and I'm glad in a lot of your writing you go beyond the Matrix, the movie concept, because as is typical, mainstream media is usually decades behind the great thinkers
yes.
of the world, the way Orwell's book was probably describing periods before he was wrote the book. Again, I think The Matrix, the movie, is describing a period from decades ago that the common person wasn't aware of, but they're able to understand and feel now with the birth of the Internet.
Well, let me just give you a quick example of what I mean by the fact that our reality is an illusion. I had some amazing experiences, which I detail in the new book in the Amazon rainforest, which will take too long to go into now. But what it did was start me researching big time over the last year the nature of reality. And what you find in you know, conventional scientific research that is available but is not made widely publicly available in terms of the mainstream media, you find some amazing things about what we think is our world around us. First of all, the three-dimensional scene that the listeners to this program are now think they're looking at does not exist in the form that they think they're seeing it.
Well, at the very least, we're discarnate electric nothing, vapor running through the world, tickling them from a distance.
Scientists have found in experimentation is that when information enters the eyes, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting. We use this phrase, I saw it with my own eyes, seeing is believing. Well, actually, it turns out, as usual, to be the opposite. Actually, believing is seeing. What we believe we see is what we actually see. When information enters the eyes, first of all, it's upside down, and it's also two-dimensional. It then passes through the brain, and it only becomes a three-dimensional scene that we all think we're seeing around us, outside of us now, when it hits the visual cortex in the brain. Now, what experimentation has shown is that as that information, as it comes into the eye, passes through the other areas of the brain, up to and sometimes 50% of what enters the eyes is changed, stuff taken out that is there, stuff put in that isn't there, before it hits the visual cortex and appears as a three-dimensional scene. And what the experimentation has shown is that this editing process takes place on the basis of the person's belief. Now, what we're seeing in this, a very simple example of it, is the stage hypnotist. The stage hypnotist implants into the mind the belief that there's an elephant in the room, or that they're eating an apple when they're eating a potato, and therefore that is what, because that belief is implanted, the brain edits reality to fit that belief. And what is happening all the time, not least through this hypnotist in the corner of every room, the television, and through the what we laughingly call the education system, and this explosion of implanted information that hits us from cradle to grave, is that we are having our belief in what is real implanted, just like a stage hypnotist. And the problem and the whole basis of the conspiracy is actually mass hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take on these externally implanted beliefs in what is real, then through this process I've described, we edit information that comes in through the eyes on the basis of that belief, and by the time it hits the visual cortex and becomes the scene we think is the world, it is a movie in our heads with a script in line with that which we have been implanted to believe.
Well, David, I heard that hypnotist story when you did it on Coast to Coast. It was a fascinating
right.
one that dispels the actual physical world, that the physical world can be manifested in front of you through these, the power of these illusions. And I've always been an advocate of a whole series of courses that should be added to the junior schools in Canada, and one of them should be an entire year on optical illusions. And if the kids, very young age, studied and were exposed to myriad optical illusions, they'd have a much better ability to cope with the illusions that are put on them every single day.
Here, here. We just very quickly, that story you mentioned, it's a brilliant example of what I'm talking about. Just very quickly.
Oh, I'd love to hear it, because the audience in Toronto might not have, but we do have to do a quick break. We'll come right back to that.
When we come back, we'll be back with you, David. Just stand by. We've got another, well, more than an hour to go. It's 5-1 in Toronto. Stay tuned. Lenny Bloom here, Sleeper.
This is a great story coming up.
Great story coming out. Do you want to miss the rest of this show on AM 640 Mojo Radio, Conspiracy Radio for all spies?
This was before Charles was married to Diana. He was involved with Kamala Parker Bowles, but she became pregnant by Charles, and she produced a baby, and this baby was presented at the ritual and killed. And that is the price, the sacrifice of the firstborn between union.
Cloak and Dagger lines are open. 416-870-6400 or cellular *640. It's talk radio for spies on Mojo Radio.
Okay, we're back with Cloak and Dagger. I'm Lenny Bloom. We're coming to you live from downtown Toronto. We're coming up to 1 a.m. The owners of the system are asleep, and we can come out and play and continue to expose the secrets that the shadow government hopes you don't learn. And here we are, and Sleeper, over to you. And David Icke is on with us, and we're taking your calls at 870-6400 or *640 on the cell. And let's keep going, because David's got a lot of interesting things to talk about.
Before we go on to that story about the elephant and the hypnotist, which intrigued me so much, David, one thing we never brought up on Cloak and Dagger, Lenny, which
yes,
David Icke might be able to shed some light on, the most recent royal birth was an induced labor that fell within hours of a full moon. And an eclipse, was it not, as well? I remember I was out taking shots, taking photos of the moon, and I come in and catch the late night news and find out that the baby was induced weeks early. Is that a typical birthing ritual in the royal family, David?
Well, Sleeper, if people are listening to this stuff for the first time, they'll be going, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But when you actually research this, and I have for 14 years full-time and been to over 40 countries doing it, these things do matter to these people. And I'll give you another example. One of the people and background that I talk about in a book called The Biggest Secret is the death of Princess Diana and her life as a lady I met once. I got access to one of her closest confidants for 9 years, up to shortly before she died, who told me a lot of background, which is in The Biggest Secret, that this guy, Paul Burrell, the butler, has confirmed in his revelations recently, i.e. that people that cared for Diana in organizations like MI5 were feeding her information to be very, very careful, because they, the establishment wanted rid of her. And interestingly, in one of the books which Diana provided the information for, she says that during the marriage to Charles, once the children were born, that was immediately the time when Charles just basically finished it, didn't want to know anymore, because of course the Camilla Parker Bowles relationship was going on all the way through. What they wanted from Diana was her genes, that's all, to infuse them with the genetics of the Windsors. And one of the things she says in through one of these books is that she was told that she was going to be induced with William, the first child, to make sure the birth synchronized, wait for this, with Charles's polo playing program.
That was the story she was told.
I mean, what does that say about Charles? But it's not actually true. It was what she was told, because the inducing of William meant that he was born on the summer solstice. And if people, you know, read my books, and indeed the books of many others, they'll see that the Illuminati, who are ritual date obsessed as well as symbolism obsessed, the summer solstice is a major, major day for them. The worship of the sun and the following the cycles of the sun is a mega part of their ritualism. And for her, Diana to be induced to produce the heir to the throne on the summer solstice is absolutely no accident and totally in line with the way these people operate.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones again.
Sure.
And by the way, David, I if people go to cloakanddagger.ca and click on your name, they can get all the information, the phone number and your Bridge of Love website and all the information on how to order your books. Let's go to our David from Mississauga. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Okay. Hi, David. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger. Another David.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
David Icke.
Hello, David.
It's an honor to speak to you.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of yours. I've only been reading your books for the past, I think, 3 weeks.
Right.
And I'm very taken by them.
Did you have a question?
I believe everything you say in the books. I just want to know, what's the purpose of man?
Well, this is something I do go into in Tales from the Time Loop, where although I, you know, the first chunk of the book is very much the Five Sins World and the war on terrorism, that gigantic scam and all the stuff that's behind it, I do move on to other levels of this, and one of them is this whole nature of reality and what we are. And what we are is infinite consciousness in which there is only one infinite I, and there's no actually any we. All the divisions are illusions. And again, won't go into it now because it'd take too long, but I had a revelatory experience, as I mentioned earlier, in the Amazon in January, when I learned a very simple thing, which was the line, infinite love is the only truth, everything else is illusion. And what that means is that the fact that everything is one infinite consciousness, which is what quantum physics is confirming, is the only truth. Everything else is the imagination of that consciousness manifesting itself as apparent reality. So the purpose of man is an illusion. It's just an imagination. It's an experience that the infinite consciousness, which we all are part of, and indeed all are, is experiencing. And like I said, I mentioned earlier, when Sleeper was talking about this story,
mm-hmm.
About the nature of reality, just to give you an example of this illusory nature of what we think is real and what we think is a man. This is why, incidentally, Lenny and everyone else, this whole idea of racism, both those who claim some special nature of their race or those that condemn another on the basis of race, that's why it is so utterly, utterly juvenile and stupid, because it's illusion. All of it's illusion. And the story is this, that and I've heard many different versions of the same theme, but here's a really good one. It's a book, very good book, called The Holographic Universe, written by a guy called Michael Talbot in the early 90s. And he tells a story in there of something he actually experienced. His father held a party for some friends and invited a professional hypnotist along to do party tricks. And he did the usual stuff, elephant in the room, giraffe in the room. Then he had this guy called Tom, and he was sat down, and he put him through the normal stuff. And then as he was about to bring him to what apparently was a waking state, he said to him, when I bring you to a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter. Your daughter will not be in the room. And so he brings him out, and by this time the hypnotist had led his daughter to stand right in front of him. So this guy Tom is looking into the midriff of his daughter. So the hypnotist says to him, "Can you see your daughter, Tom?" He said, no, can't see her, she's not here. His daughter starts giggling, he can't hear her. The hypnotist then goes behind the daughter and pushes something in the small of her back and says to Tom, "What am I holding in my hand?" And looking bewildered, he said, "Well, you're holding a watch." He said, "There's an inscription on it. Can you read it?" He read the inscription. And his daughter is standing between him and the watch. Now, how is this possible? Under the version of reality and life that we are falsely given through education or what passes for it in the media, etc. That is impossible, what I've just described, but it's not. What has happened is that, coming back to what I mentioned earlier, the hypnotist has implanted the belief that his daughter's not in the room. So when that information enters that man's eyes, his daughter is in it. But as it passes through the brain and the implanted belief, she is taken out of the scene. So by the time the information hits the visual cortex and apparently manifests as a three-dimensional scene, his daughter is no longer in the movie because he's been edited out. And I remember years ago I met an amazing man in Africa, Credo Mutwa, the official historian of the Zulu Nation, who was talking to me about all these other dimensional entities that manipulate this world by possessing the bodies of these particular bloodlines that I talk about. And I said to him years ago, this apparently primitive black man in Africa, they know nothing. I said, why, if these entities are all around us, why don't more people actually see them? And he said, because the brain edits them out, mm-hmm. because they are so fantastic compared with what people are implanted to believe is possible or exists, that the brain edits them out of the scene, and so although they're there, people don't see them.
But just very quickly,
when you see the illusory nature of reality, And the fact that what we think we're seeing as even human beings around us are actually illusions generated from our minds. What is the purpose of man? Well, it's just an illusory experience that the infinite one consciousness is having, and we are experiencing that on one level now.
Okay,
yeah,
David, let's get to
Well, there's many spiritual religions that are popular in the modern world, which describe existence as a soul coming to Earth to experience this plane, just to try this reality.
Some religions claim that
if you look at the first Matrix movie, which like I said earlier, brilliantly provided a visual scene of what we're actually experiencing. That's exactly basically the situation we are in. It's a dream world. The only difference between the dreams we have in sleep and the dream we are having in a apparently waking state is we take this dream to be real, and that's why it controls us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Even without media, like shows like ours and television and all the media that everyone is exposed to at such an early age, mixing and matching forms of communication, overloading us. There's also the conditioning in school. I know of stories where young people draw purple halos around the cows that they're told to draw in grade 2, and they continue to do this. They're seeing auras, or they're seeing other spectrums of energy, which might not be anything magical or spiritual. It's just an ability, natural ability of man that is suppressed very early on.
Sleeper, let's move along. Let's try and shut down some of these calls. They're starting to back up.
I get so fired up. I got a million questions for David myself.
Let's go to number 5. Peter.
Hi, Peter. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Hello.
Hi, Peter. You're on with Sleeper and Lenny Bloom and David Icke.
Hey, David. Very interesting. I just wanted to ask you a question. You keep referring to The Matrix. It's a funny. It's a funny movie. What in your opinion is the actual crux of that movie?
Well, I mean, there are many cruxes of it. I mean, I think the overwhelmingly important thing would come from the movie in terms of people's daily experience is to realize that what we think is real is actually an illusion. And illusions can be changed. We can have nice illusions or we can have unpleasant illusions. They're still illusions. And when we take this to be real, we get trapped by it. And I'll give you another example of of the nature of the illusion, which was very much, again, part of this whole Matrix theme. I'm sitting in a room now, and I appear, because that's my implanted reality, to be surrounded by four solid walls. If I tried to walk through that wall, I would smack my head, because my reality, although intellectually I understand the wall is not solid, my at a level of my, if you like, consciousness, because I've lived in this world for 51 years, I still believe that that is solid, and so I make it so. The fact is, it cannot be. It's impossible. You ask a scientist or anybody else, what is that wall made of, that solid wall? And they'll say, well, it's made of atoms, mate. Well, has anyone seen the inside of an atom? From our reality, it is almost entirely empty space.
Mm-hmm.
You can hardly get anything less solid than an atom. As one physicist said, I was reading, if you take the inside of an atom to be the size of a cathedral, then the particles within it are about the size of a 10-cent piece. The rest is, from our reality, like I say, empty space.
Yes.
How can atoms that are almost totally unsolid make up solid walls? They can't. Our minds make it so. And the Matrix movie, particularly the first one, portrayed that brilliantly. And I think that was a very, very big contribution to human understanding. So long as people realize that it was telling the truth, and it wasn't just, you know, a movie script.
Yeah, well, David, we talk a lot about physics on Cloak and Dagger, and as you mentioned it earlier, the visual attitude towards how an atom works, right? The drawings that the visually biased
right.
Westerners made for us to understand those concepts is very deceptive. But don't you also find that physics mirrors the artist's perception of man's existence at every time? At each time physics advances, it advances in a predictable way to the way that people are living in the environment of Earth.
And one of the things that I learned, how I learned this, like I say, that will be for another time, but one of the things I learned in the Amazon experience was that there are no laws of physics. There are only those we believe in. When we believe something different, then the laws of physics will change, because they're an illusion too. And it's kind of interesting, Sleeper, that they're finding that in the subatomic quantum kind of levels of experimentation, that the belief, here we go again, the belief of the scientist conducting the experiment is affecting the outcome of the experiment. Of course it is. And the other interesting thing, I'm sure...
David, just hold that thought. We do have to go to break.
Sorry about that.
We're a blowtorch station here, which means we do have to throw in the ads. But when we come back, we'll be back with David Icke coming to you live on the all-new AM 640 Mojo Radio. Stay tuned. Lenny Bloom, Sleeper, and David Icke on the phone. Conspiracy Radio for Spies.
Needed a new leader to restore its former glory.
Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found a man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and
Okay, we're back. Yes, we're marching to a faster pace. The electric age is speeding us up, moving us into a master race, bringing in the fascist global conspiracy. Over to you, Sleeper.
And we all know how much Lenny loves show tunes.
Well, I think that it's very interesting that Producers has become a big hit. It was a movie, and now it's a big hit in New York and in Toronto, talking about the fascist world. These things are reflections on culture, and we should study their grammars.
Everything's a joke now. So, we have David Icke here on Cloak and Dagger. It's our honor. We have almost 45 minutes left with him. And David, if you wouldn't mind, we're going to try to shotgun some calls. Our lines have been jammed for a while, and there's some people very patiently waiting. We'll see if we can get as many
as
we've
got about
you.
Six or seven calls here. And try and shotgun through them, David.
And then we'll get back to our hologram.
We're being very diplomatic, you know. What you're meaning is... shut up and get on with it.
Move along. We have a schedule. Jeez. Okay. Okay, here we go. William, you're talking about the amazing Kreskin. You have a question for David.
Yes, to help me understand all this better, is that the way the amazing Kreskin works with his audiences, creating these illusions and hypnosis?
I don't know. I mean, I don't
Thanks
know
for
about,
your call.
About the guy, but, illusionists, what are they doing? What are they called, illusionists, if that's what this guy is?
Okay, let's
go to
let's
Judy
see
in
about,
Oakville. Judy, welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Good
hey,
morning.
How's it going?
Morning.
Good morning, David.
What is morning here? It's quarter past six
yes,
in the morning.
We're 5 hours behind you.
It's raining.
Yes, it is.
Is anyone surprised?
Foggy here. I have a question for you, David.
Okay.
Do you know or have you met Alexander Duncan Cameron or Al Bielek or Preston Nichols? Because what you've been talking about sounds exactly like Montauk.
Yeah, I've met Al Bielek a number of times. Found him to be a very nice guy, a very genuine guy in my conversations with him. And he's been very ill recently.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're quite right. I mean, a lot of the stuff about Montauk, and there's also a guy called Stuart Swerdlow who talks about his experiences in this mind control operation in Long Island, New York, Montauk, that you talk about, and also talks about his experiences of what I write about in my books. And he gets his information, obviously, from a totally different point of experience, and that is this whole reptilian and other dimensional entity manipulation of this world. And in the end, it is all about manipulating our reality, because our sense of reality becomes our experienced reality for the reasons that I've talked about and other reasons also. And so it's worth, given the fact that we're talking on a show that exposes the whole conspiracy, what this stuff that we've been discussing for the last little while actually means in terms of the conspiracy on a five-sense level. What it means is that if they can manipulate our belief in what is real, we will create that experience on the basis of being implanted with that belief. So this is why, although like Sleeper said earlier, you can talk in about all these different levels of the manipulation with secret societies and the Bush family and all that stuff. In the end, what they want is control of our reality, control of our minds, control mm-hmm. of what we believe. And that's what has happened. We are dealing with mass hypnosis, and they've set the system up to have people called teachers and television presenters and journalists, etc.,
authorities and specialists,
largely unknowing hypnotists for the population, instilling a belief. And this is the key. It's not about stockpiling weapons and saying we must have a revolution against George Bush, start firing. We have to take back our reality.
Right,
and take
Judy,
our minds back, then we'll take our reality back and we'll take our experience back.
So could you say then that if the collective thought something else was going to occur, like wake up and change their consciousness, then things, our reality such as it is, would change?
It has to. It has to. Even, I mean, in Tales from the Time Loop, I go into this in greater detail on a bigger perspective, but even on that basic level of the way we edit our reality, what comes into our eyes on the basis of our belief, if a hypnotist can put an elephant in the room by implanting that belief and then take it out again by withdrawing that implanted belief, even on that basic level, that person's reality and experience is dramatically changing. One minute there's a bloody elephant in the room, and the next minute there's not. And on that basis, we can change our reality so we experience a paradise rather than a prison,
mm-hmm.
where we experience freedom rather than a tyranny.
Depression, yeah.
And so it is what we experience, and we all experience. We all basically live in our own universe.
Yes.
And there are vast areas in which we have what I call consensus reality. Like, for instance, we might all agree that that's a car going past the window, but we won't all agree on whether we like it or not, all this other stuff. The detail we can disagree on.
Right.
But beyond that basic consensus, we all live in our own different universes created on the basis of our belief. And that's what the Illuminati want. They want control of our belief.
Right.
So,
now, Judy,
can
I also
just ask one more question?
Okay, make it quick, please.
Yes.
We're going to get lots of people on.
I'm just wondering, how much of the population needs to wake up to change this collective reality?
Huh. Well, actually, I'm so glad you asked that question, because it's fundamentally important. Some people may have come across this phenomenon, and it's so, so relevant to what's happening, called the 100 monkey syndrome. What they found in experimentation is once a certain number of a species, and thank you, infinite one, it's not anything like half the species, it's actually a relative few. Once a certain number of a species has been taught something new, suddenly, inexplicably, but it's not, all of that species, or vast numbers of them, are suddenly doing that spontaneously. They just know how to do it without being shown, and this, they call it the 100 monkey syndrome. This is what's happening to people, and it works very simply. There is a level of our consciousness, because everything in the end is one I, where the human species, if you like the animal species, is actually connected as one consciousness. It's what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. It's what I call consensus reality. Now, at that level, you might see that as the internet, and us as, quote, individuals, as computers connected to the internet. There's a two-way process going on all the time. Our individual reality is being transported into the collective reality, and the reality of the collective reality is also feeding its belief system into us, and we're affecting each other. What happens with the 100 monkey syndrome, and what is happening now with the human species, is that as more and more people, quote, wake up, and what do we use that term, wake up, for? Because that's exactly what we do when we start to see the world as it is. We wake up from the hypnotic trance. As more and more people wake up, they are transferring that new reality, hey, I can see what's happening now, into the collective reality. And there comes a point where it becomes powerful enough to be accessed by anyone that is connected to that collective level. In other words,
we can start a chain reaction.
Be accessed by the individual computers. And at that point, that's when the 100 monkey syndrome kicks in,
mm-hmm.
because instead of having to read books or go to talks or listen to radio stations to find out what's going on, people suddenly, inexplicably, spontaneously know, hey, I can see it now. And this is beginning to happen. And it's nothing like half the species. And because of this 100 monkey syndrome, we are going to see a transformation of human perception of reality that will blow our minds in the next 10 years.
Yes.
Because people are, I know from my own experience, waking up in greater and greater numbers, and this whole prison global state is coming down. At the point where it appears now to be at its strongest, is actually in its death throes.
David, I have to jump in to introduce a break. A few points there for Judy. Thanks for taking us down that path. That was a great question. Good call.
Stay on the lines. We'll be back to all the calls after the break.
Get into our archives if you want to learn more about Duncan Cameron and Al Bielek. They've been on the show many times and talked in depth about their experience and their personal lives. And one thing, David, maybe we can talk more about when we come back from this commercial break. We always say we want to wake people up, but I think it's a good way to look at it, that everybody is hypnotized right now. So we don't wake up first. First, we must put everyone to sleep, then wake them up, because you can't be woken up from a hypnotic state directly. So that's another little fine point about how hard it is to get people out of that false reality.
Stay on the phones. We'll be back in a moment, and stay by your radio. We'll be with David Icke after the break. I'm Lenny Bloom. Sleepers in the studio with me. We're going to be back with more secrets the shadow government hopes you don't learn.
And now, more good news. Bad news. Truth on Cloak and Dagger, live on Mojo Radio.
Okay, we're back with Cloak and Dagger, and David Icke's on the phone. It's 1:30. We've got about a half hour to go. The Percept portal will remain open. Until then, let's go to line 12. Miss Piperin, welcome to Cloak and Dagger.
Yes, David Icke, I'm Mrs. Pippinell, and I've been a private investigator for over 24 years working with various police agencies on organized crime hits. Now,
right.
I got a personal friend who's a Vatican assassin, a contract killer, a hitman. Now, to get into his killing mode, he shapeshifts.
Woo.
Yes. Now, closest to what I can describe what he looks like when he shapeshifts is Gollum from The Lord of the Rings, or a gargoyle.
A gargoyle, yeah.
A gargoyle, yes. Now, I believe that he's been possessed ever since he has been a child, and his brain has honeycombed. I think that his orders come from black nobility. And then I have also seen your video with Revelations of a Mother Goddess.
Right.
But I really believe that his orders come from Pindar, the Marquis de Libero.
Yeah.
Now, who exactly is Marquis de Libero?
Well, we'd all like to know that. According to people who have met this character, and the Marquis de Libero may well be a code name rather than his real name, he seems to come from the, and Stuart Swerdlow also talks about this guy as well, the guy who writes books about his experience of the Montauk mind control project we talked about a few minutes ago. It appears to come from the Alsace-Lorraine area of the of Europe around the French-German border, and the House of Lorraine has been one of these bloodlines going way, way back. And of course, the symbol of the House of Lorraine is the double cross, which is extremely appropriate given the conspiracy that's going on. I am fascinated to hear what you say, and I really would like to talk to you more when the program is over, if that's possible, or maybe tomorrow if we could get together. But what you describe, and I'm sure people listening to this who've come across it for the first time are going, wow, just like they have on many occasions this evening, I'm sure. What you've just described is something that's been described to me all over the world by hundreds and hundreds of people from every walk of life that you could imagine. And what you suppose to be the situation, I think you're absolutely right, because what I've learned over the years is this, that this obsession with bloodline is because there was an interbreeding. And I think there's I was reading an article the other day, there's about 246 different ancient cultures around the world that this particular writer had listed that has the same basic theme of the interbreeding between a non-human race and humans in the ancient world, creating hybrid bloodlines that became those that took the royal leadership of the countries around the world on the basis of this age-old theme of, quote, the divine right to rule. What does that mean? It certainly doesn't mean the divine, the one infinite consciousness. It means what were perceived to be the gods, those that interbred with humans. And it means the right to rule claimed because of your bloodline, because of your DNA. And again, if people find that challenging, about 2 hours from where I'm sitting in Buckingham Palace, we have a head of state in Britain. Of course, you have in Canada, perversely, it's 2003, please, called Queen Elizabeth II, who is only head of state because of her DNA. A different DNA, she might be cleaning the streets, never mind sitting on the throne. That's how ludicrous it is. And the question then came, why are they obsessed with bloodline? Why are they obsessed with this DNA? Well, it turns out from what I've talked, been told by insiders, many of them, is that this DNA, because everything is a vibration in our reality, everything is a frequency field, carries a frequency because of the interbreeding that is in sympathy and harmony with these other dimensional entities that operate just outside the visual frequency range of the five senses. In other words, they're just beyond the ability of our five senses to pick them up and see them. And therefore, those entities can, quote, possess these particular bloodlines more easily than they can the general population that doesn't have this, what has been described to me by one insider as this DNA corruption. So when you are describing this person
shape-shifting into a gargoyle-type figure. And my goodness me, I wish I had a pound for every time I've had that description given to me. What you're seeing are these other dimensional entities manifesting in our reality as they shape-shift, and suddenly you're seeing what's really inside that apparently human body, and what's really controlling the mental and emotional processes.
We want to move along, David.
Yeah, I can tell you straight off.
This is fundamentally important stuff. I mean, the story that the ladies just told is extremely important for people to appreciate,
yeah,
because this is the reality of the world we live in.
And that is someone we know under an alias, I believe it is, and we can probably get you in contact with her so that she can go into more detail with you directly over that story. And what you've been talking about, I mean, I've been a fan of interventionalism since seeing 2001: A Space Odyssey, so I'm halfway there, so to speak, to the lizard race and being possessed. Let's go back to the phones here, folks.
Rob and Leeside.
All right, then.
How you guys doing?
Welcome to Cloak and Dagger,
Rob. You got
You're
a quick question
David
for David?
Yes, I got a question, man. I'm very happy to ask it. My contention, as you guys have sort of shared, is that the Achilles heel of this Illuminati oppressive force's successes over mankind really rests for me on the notion of a majority somehow empowered by knowledge. So my question doesn't deal so much with your subject matter as the means which disseminated. Do you feel ways to, like, improve both the availability and the digestibility of this stuff by maybe even taking lessons from Illuminati manipulation techniques and apply that kind of production value to it that they use to generate demand and manufacture popularity?
Well, thank you very much, Rob. You were breaking up a little there. Did you catch all that, David?
No, not all of it, because of the breakup. But I'm not in favor of in any way using Illuminati manipulation techniques, because I don't think that's the way to change reality, is to just use the same techniques to bring about a different reality, because in the end it's the same one. It's just, you know, the name on the door just changes. For me, what we need to do is set our minds free, and to do that we have to set ourselves free from fear, because the biggest block on people communicating this information, because I'll tell you from my own experience, there are vast numbers of people compared with those that actually say, hey, this is what I believe, who actually believe the same thing. But what they've done is they've set up a system in which if you conform to the prevailing reality, i.e. you keep within the box and you don't talk outside of the box, then you're left alone. If you start to challenge the prevailing reality, you're either mad, some kind of racist, or dangerous in some other way. And so they make it a hassle and unpleasant to be different, because they want a world of uniformity, because they want to hold this uniform reality that holds us in the matrix. And so what we need to do is, first of all, you know, take a deep breath and stop being intimidated, or as the Japanese say in a national phrase, don't be the nail that stands out above the rest, because that's the first one to get hit, and start to speak our truth. And if people don't like it, well, they can do the other thing. I mean, what does it matter what our family and friends think about us if they do not have the basic respect to allow us to believe what we want to believe,
well,
without
David,
being intimidated for doing so? That's the fundamental thing. Set ourselves free to speak our truth, to go and explore where we choose to explore, to live our life as we choose it without imposing it on others.
David,
and then this information will start to flow. I'll give you an example of what.
Okay,
I mean.
We do have to go to break, so.
Immediately afterwards, or do you do it now?
Go ahead.
Very quickly, I went to a bookshop and I was talking to the manager, and I bought one of my books out, and he said, do you know, I had a strange experience. He said, I got the staff together because they were having a book signing thing. This is years ago now. And he said, I asked them what they thought of your material. It turns out that about 80% of them were very sympathetic with the themes, because they thought that that's basically how I saw it. Oh, yes, I can accept that. But none of them had said so to that any of the others, or maybe one or two had, but most of them had not said what they thought to the others, because they feared being ridiculed by the others for saying they agreed with some of the things that I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this that stops the flow of information, because the greatest flow of information is people conversing with themselves in their, and others around them in their everyday life, and it's this fear that stops that. Let that go, and the cork comes out of the bottle.
Yeah, okay. And I also find that you have to get the people around you to start thinking the same way, because you don't want to alienate yourself from your parents or your siblings, and be the radical in the family. You need to bring them up to speed and bring them along with you, otherwise you do feel alienated, then you are hesitant to...
And if you want to feel alienated because they don't come with you, then okay, make that choice. But the Matrix got you.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, what we need to do is be at peace, not only with others believing something different to us, but be at peace with us believing something different to others. I am me, I am free.
Yes.
And if our children or parents don't like it, well, they just have to do the other thing, okay? Let's not talk about it. Let's have a beer or something. We must retain our right to live our individual truth,
well,
and not have someone else's imposed upon us. If we do that, we've got freedom in an instant.
I think it's great that you're touching on some of the coping tips, because I try to go that way with a lot of people. When we come back, we have to go to break. I'm going to be talking about reacting to the media, because even fighting the media can feed it, I believe, and we'll talk to David about that.
And we're going to get back to Sherman. He has a couple of questions, and we'll be back on AM 640 Mojo Radio, Conspiracy Radio for Spies. Stay tuned.
Or cellular, *640. Email at onair@mojoradio.com. Three ways to make contact with Cloak and Dagger on Mojo Radio.
Okay, we're back on Cloak and Dagger, 12 minutes to 2. The Percept portal will remain open for 12 more minutes. And, of course, next Thursday we'll be back after the Leaf game. Next Thursday, I'm not sure the time, but it'll be somewhere around 11:15 or 11:30. So you won't want to miss our show next week. Stay tuned to our website, and we'll update you on what we're going to be doing next week. David, we're going to get to a quick question here from Sherman, who's been sitting listening. Sherman, go ahead.
David, two short questions. You mentioned illusions. Do you have any opinions as to whether the two airplanes that supposedly hit the Twin Towers in New York were illusions, such as a hologram or something else?
I've heard it said. Obviously,
it's my contention,
the reality we experience, that certainly didn't seem to be the case. It seemed to be very physical and the whole thing. But I can't say, I definitely accept that it was an illusion and all that stuff. But what I will say is the deeper and deeper and deeper that I get in the understanding of the nature of reality and the total illusory nature of what we think we're seeing, the possibility cannot be dismissed, let's put it that way. But I obviously at this moment it seemed very the five cents to me.
The other question is, have you yourself seen any of the shape-shifting or reptilian situations that you discussed?
I've seen eyes change, and I had a number of experiences, not with reptilian, but with dramatic changes in people. I'll give you one quick example. Years ago, when I was a spokesman for the British Green Party back in the 80s, and funnily enough, this was before I was into any of this stuff. I was just, I was still working for the BBC as an anchorman. And I was invited onto a satellite television channel to comment on the election results coming in about 1986. When I went to the makeup room to have the powder put on your forehead and stuff, it was no one there except a guy sitting in another chair. And this man turned out to be Ted Heath, who was the British Prime Minister from 1970 to 74, and a guy actually who signed us in to the European Union as it became, which is a major Illuminati operation. And I just, he was well-known British politician. I was on television. I sat down in the chair next to him, and I looked across, and I just nodded, you know, hello, all right, nice to meet you. I went back to my family that night, and I said, you'll never guess the experience I've just had with Ted Heath. Because what happened was he never acknowledged me in any way. He just turned his head and looked at me, and his head, once it had turned, never moved. His eyes looked up to the top of my head, and all I can say is that he scanned me. His eyes went from the top of my head down to my feet, stopped, went all the way back again, and then he turned his head and faced the mirror, never said a word. And while I'm looking at his eyes doing this, they went completely black. I'm talking the whites of the eyes, the color, the pupil, everything just went completely black. And as I looked at him in amazement, when we look at people, there is a point, well, what do we call it? We call it eye contact. There's a point where we make a contact at the point of the eye. Not when he went into this state. I was looking into two black holes, basically, and now I realize all these years later what I was actually doing was looking into another dimension, into the realms that the entities that possess these people actually exist in. There was no point of eye contact. Now, years and years and years later, when I got into this research, and I was talking to people that had experienced rituals and had experienced people shape-shifting into a reptilian form, who should be one of the names that came up over and over, but Ted Heath. So I have experienced that for sure, yeah, but not the actual shape-shifting of the reptilian that the lady earlier described.
Okay, let's get to some other calls.
Yeah, well,
here.
I just want to say to the audience, you can tell how we're so fortunate to have David Icke on Cloak and Dagger on Mojo Radio, because he can talk about so many different things, and I've always said that those are the guests that impress me the most, talk on different levels, about different periods of history, about different sensibilities, different levels of thought, and we could go on forever and ever, but we have less than 10 minutes to go. We're going to try to squeeze on as many calls as we can, do a summation with David, and thank him very much. Okay, here we go. Firing back to the phones, George from Toronto. Welcome to Cloak and Dagger, bringing up a topic that I believe David Icke is a little bit expert in.
Yeah, hi, Lenny Sleeper, and fascinating guest you are, David.
Thanks, George.
What I'd like to know is, do you think that by taking psychoactive drugs such as LSD and LSD, etc., allows one to elevate their consciousness, or does it dull the senses that the Illuminati would like to control us under?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and I'm not expert enough on the whole range of this to give you an answer. And like most answers, it's not black and white, it's shades of gray. I think it can be both. It depends how it's used and to what end, and also the state of mind of the person using it. the reason Sleeper made his comment, I'm sure, is because when I talked about earlier of going to the Amazon, having that experience in January, this is actually basically what happened. When I was finishing up the book before this one called Alice in Wonderland, the World Trade Center Disaster, I said to my wife, you know, if I'm going to take this on and understand the next level of this whole story, I'm going to have to go in awareness, not in a nighttime dream, but in awareness into other dimensions and experience them and look into this world from them and get another perspective. Around that time, I got this invite to go down to the Amazon with a group of people and speak to them and also participate in something called ayahuasca, which is a plant which they turn into a tea, and shaman in South America have been using this to take people into other states of awareness for centuries, at least centuries. Now, I've got to 50 years of age, as I was then, without taking a single magic mushroom or anything like that. I never thought about it, but I thought I'm going to give this a go because I want to see if this will take me into the states that I want to experience. And interestingly also, just as a quick aside, the reason these people asked me down there was because so many people that had taken this tea and experienced this other dimensional reality had come back and said they saw reptilian beings. That's the reason they asked me. Anyway, I went down there and I took it. And I went into over two nights for literally, I suppose, a total of about 7 hours. I went into an amazing, blissful place. in which I was self-aware, but I was everything that existed. I was one infinite consciousness, which is what we all are. And it gave me a perspective looking into this world of the nature of the Matrix, and a voice as powerful and as clear as mine is now spoke to me on the second night for 5 hours, describing the nature of reality, how we create it. I detail all this in Tales from the Time Loop.
David, we're running...
just very quickly.
Yeah, we're running skinny on time.
Yeah, yeah. When I came back from this, back to England, I spent 6 months researching in quantum physics and scientific experimentation into the nature of reality to see if what they found supported what this voice told me in this psychoactive state in the Amazon. And the two synchronized astonishingly. And therefore, in answer to the question, I, from my experience, have found that it can be an amazing revelation that can take you beyond the bounds of the five senses and realize just what an illusion this world is.
David,
used wrongly,
Dave, I've got in.
Destructive.
David, yeah. We're running skinny on time, and I've got to thank you and all our callers for their calls. David, just wrap it up here. It's been fantastic having you on for the 2 hours. We're looking forward to having you on again really soon.
Sure.
Just rattle off the website that people can order the book at.
Yeah, it's davidicke.com, and Icke is I-C-K-E. And all the details.
Terrific.
And
we've got the link on our site to your...
Sure.
But thank you for joining us. It's been a real pleasure, and we sure hope you'll come back.
All the best, sleeper.
Yes, and we hope to have you back soon. I want to get deeper into all these subjects. A close friend of Cloak and Dagger was introduced to remote viewing through one of your seminars. The Matrix, the holograms, the whole gamut, I think. We never even talked about Lady Di tonight, let alone the Kennedy assassination. I mean, we need John for 12, 13
hours.
Can
you come back in December, please?
Yeah, we will. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion.
God bless, David.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for being with us.
Okay, sleeper, it's been an exciting time. Thank you for all the callers for calling in. There's a few there that we didn't get to. We'll have David back in December. One thing's for sure, whoever says this man is a racist and spreads hate just doesn't understand what's really going on or has some hidden agenda. We really had a wonderful time. I think we're all very proud that he was on and gave us an update on
absolutely
what's going
fantastic
on in the global conspiracy.
Almost too bad because there were so many people left on hold, and they were very patient. We want to thank them.
And we want to thank
Mike
Sherman.
From,
he'll be
Southampton. We'll have him on with Sherman next week, I'm
just
sure.
Pump Sherman in there. We'll just say a quick goodbye to Sherman. He's on number 12. Sherman, thank you so much for your update in the first hour, and we welcome you in. We'll look forward to having you back again.
Can we squeeze on a quick call for Sherman?
Yep.
This guy's been so patient. Sherman, stay with us. Mike from Southampton, we're going to squeeze you on for the dying seconds here.
Oh, yes, Mike.
2 hours.
Wow.
I know.
2 hours.
All right, what's your question?
I know.
And I wanted to talk about the Kennedy conspiracy. I had questions for this guy about the biggest conspiracy that's ever been hidden.
Well, Mike, we'll call back next week for sure, and we will put you on right at the top of the hour.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
We got to sign off.
We got to sign off.
We'll be back next Thursday, 11 till 2 a.m. This is Cloak & Dagger on Mojo Radio AM 640. CloakandDagger.ca to check out links to old shows, to find out more about David Icke, about Sherman Skolnick, to watch our daily updates.
Yep, and when truth is manufactured by Big Brother, then counter-truth as intelligence is where it's at, and we're where it's at, so be here next week.
Even though...
Cloak & Dagger...
We're an illusion, we don't exist.
Conspiracy Radio... For spies!
All this.